Well, let's open up our Bibles. Matthew's Gospel and chapter 14, continuing our series tonight on kingdom. And the passage we're looking at is in verses 22 to 36. Whenever we preach through a gospel, and we try to do so every few years, whenever we do, I can't wait to get to this passage of Jesus walking on the water. And it's great that I can actually decide who preaches what. So there we go. So I've got this one by design. Matthew chapter 14 and verse 22 to 36. So let's read. Immediately, Jesus made the disciples get into the boat and go on ahead of him to the other side while he dismissed the crowd. After he had dismissed them, he went up on a mountainside by himself to pray. Later that night, he was there alone, and the boat was already a considerable distance from land, buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Shortly before dawn, Jesus went out to them, walking on the lake. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. "It's a ghost," they said, and cried out in fear. But Jesus immediately said to them, "Take courage. It is I. Don't be afraid." "Lord, if it's you," Peter replied, "tell me to come to you on the water." "Come," he said. Then Peter got down out of the boat, walked on the water, and came toward Jesus. But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, "Lord, save me." Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" And when they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped Jesus, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." When they had crossed over, they landed at Gennesaret. And when the men of that place recognized Jesus, they sent word to all the surrounding country. People brought all their sick to him and begged him to let the sick just touch the edge of his cloak. And all who touched it were healed. Well, this has got to be one of the most fun and marvelous miracles ever. Certainly, walking on the water and someone else walking on the water as well. I mean, what a great thing to see and to witness. And what a wonderful response to this miracle there in verse 32. They worshipped him saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." That's the response to this miracle. That's the reaction of the disciples. "Truly, Jesus, you are the Son of God." Now, we react to amazing things in different ways. A top striker scores a wonderful goal. The crowd chant his name and they say it's going to be the goal of the season. A British tennis player progresses to Wimbledon semi-finals. She's on the front page of all the national newspapers and they say it's the best thing for 40 years. An artist releases a new song. It's all over YouTube and the fans are saying, "Wow, they are amazing." And your teenager hoovers his room and you faint. But different things produce different reactions from different people. And when the disciples saw what had happened here, their reaction was to praise Jesus. "Truly, you are the Son of God." Now that title is given to Jesus a few times throughout Matthew's Gospel. In chapter 3, the Father uses it, "This is my Son." In chapter 4, the devil knows it, "You are the Son of God." Or, "If you are the Son of God," he says to him. In chapter 8, the demons acknowledge it. In chapter 26, the high priests ask Jesus, "Are you the Son of God?" And in chapter 26, verse 64, Jesus acknowledges that he is the Son of God. What a great title. Horribly misunderstood by many people when they think of him being the biological Son of God. We know that it's not the biological, as if the horrible thing happened where the father fathered the son, but rather it's identity and nature. The son of someone shares the nature of that thing that they're the son of. The Son of God shares the nature of God himself. Indeed, he is God himself. Sometimes the scriptures call Jesus God. And you might say, well, why then do we call him the Son of God if he is God? Well, to keep this vital nature of the Trinity intact. Father, Son, and Holy Spirit. One God, three persons. How are you going to talk about the three persons? We can't say God number one, God number two, and God number three, because that would cause all kinds of confusion. So we give personal names, Father, Son, Spirit. But the Father is God, the Son is God, and the Spirit is God. But when Jesus comes to earth, he's known as the Son of God. So he is God made man, God walking around. Yeah, Emmanuel, God with us. Now this Son of God then, that the disciples here recognize, truly, you are the Son of God. This Son of God says just three things during this miracle. That's all, just three things. And the first thing he says is by way of encouragement. Verse 27. But Jesus immediately said to them, take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Remember who's talking. Remember, it's the Son of God talking. God in the flesh talking. Take courage, it is I, don't be afraid. Now, why did Jesus have to say this? Well, it's because the disciples were afraid. In fact, they were more than afraid. They were actually terrified. And they were terrified for two reasons. One, because of the dangerous conditions out on the lake that night. They were quite a long way away from the shores. They were like in the middle of the lake. And there was this storm brewing. So the boat was being buffeted by the waves because the wind was against it. Now, if you're in a boat in the middle of the lake, in the total pitch black, because it was just before dawn and there were no lights on the Sea of Galilee then, there aren't these days either, it's total pitch black before dark, it's scary. So they're afraid. The second reason they're afraid is because they thought they saw a ghost. Now that would make you afraid. But if you look at verse 26, when the disciples saw him walking on the lake, they were terrified. It's a ghost, they said, and they cried out in fear. See, nobody expected this. This storm, this darkness, these tired, anxious men on that boat, and suddenly this figure appears from almost nowhere in the middle of the lake before dawn, and he's walking on the water. Well, what would you say? What would your assessment of that situation be? They go into Scooby-Doo mode. It's a ghost, they say. And they are terrified. And no wonder they're terrified. We've got every sympathy with the disciples here. Surely we would be terrified as well at that very moment. And their fear is actually emphasized here in three ways in verse 26. It says, literally, they were terrified, which is a strong word, meaning that they were agitated all within. It says they cried out in fear, and that word for fear means alarm or fright. And when it says they cried out, that's the idea of a very loud cry, and it's used of the cry of a raven. I won't even try to imitate the cry of a raven. If Doug was up here, he might try that for us. But you think of the cry of a raven. That's their cry. It's like a shriek. It's loud. They were terrified. We've got every sympathy for them. But along comes Jesus walking on the water, and he says to them, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. Those were the very things these disciples needed to hear. They were in a panic. He was not. And above the noise of the wind and the rush of the waves and the screams of the disciples, Jesus speaks. He says, take courage. It is I. Do not be afraid. First, take courage, he says. And the Greek word for that is the idea of cheer up. Be of good cheer. Or I suppose modern day version would be chill. Just calm down. That would be what he's saying. Take courage. And the third thing he says is, don't be afraid. Now, Jesus often told people not to be afraid. But between that first and the last thing, between the take courage and do not be afraid, he gives them the reason why they don't have to be afraid. It is I. It is I. You don't need to be afraid because I'm here. That's what he's saying. And when he says it is I, it's a really interesting construction in the Greek text, because what it can be translated as is I am. Take courage, I am, do not be afraid. And what's that remind you of? Reminds you of the very presence of God with Moses in the burning bush. If you just turned over the pages in your Bible to chapter 22 of Matthew, chapter 22, and look at verse 32. Jesus replying to the teachers of the law, the Jewish leaders, and he says to them in verse 29, you are in error because you do not know the scriptures or the power of God. At the resurrection, people will neither marry nor be given in marriage. They will be like the angels in heaven. But about the resurrection of the dead, have you not read what God said to you? I am the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. I am, and that's God's name. And again, in the Greek construction, is exactly the same as what Jesus said to his disciples. What's recorded as Jesus said to his disciples, I am. Jesus is using the very words that God used to Moses at the burning bush when Moses was terrified at this sight. And as these disciples are terrified by the water and the waves and this ghost-like man, Jesus says, I am. I'm with you. Take courage, be of good cheer, do not be afraid. You know, there are times in our life when we need to hear those words of Jesus as well. He knows just what to say to the disciples, and we need to hear them. And those times in our life are when the future is uncertain, or when we've got present bad news in our life, or when we're just plain simple afraid of so many things. Then we need the Son of God to come to us, drawing near to us and saying these words, take courage, Paul. It is I. Don't be afraid. And in his presence, all our fears are washed away, washed away. So that's the first thing that Jesus says, this word of encouragement. He then gives a word of invitation. Verse 29, come, he said. Come. That is a great invitation. It's one of the favorite words of Jesus. He's often said it to different people. Come, he says. Now, Jesus says this in response to Peter's amazing and daring request in verse 28. Look at verse 28. Lord, if it's you, Peter replied, tell me to come to you on the water. Now, it's emphasized a few times that Jesus was walking on the water. We see it once in verse 25, walking on the lake. Once in verse 26, walking on the lake. And now Peter says in verse 28, tell me to come to you on the water. I want to walk on the water too, Lord, he's saying. Why did Peter make such a bold request? Can you imagine saying that? Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water. Why did Peter say that? Was it because of the kind of nature that Peter had, this adventurous man that he was, always charging out first of all and dreaming big dreams? Did he ever think that as a little boy, when he was a little boy, because he grew up around the Lake of Galilee, did he ever think as he was building sandcastles on the shore or building castles out of the pebbles on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, did he ever think, one day I'd like to walk on that water? And now's my chance. Probably not. Okay. Or was he trying out his faith? Is that why he asked Jesus, Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you on the water? Was he trying out his faith? It's like, you know, maybe somebody lends you a car, or you get a hire car, or one of these special days out in a car, and it's a really fast car, and you get in there, and you say, right, now let's see what this baby can do. And you think, going to drive fast. That wouldn't be for me, but it might be for others. I won't name names, but it could be for others. And was Peter thinking here, I've got this faith, let's see what this faith can do. See, in chapter 10, Jesus sent out his disciples to do the very things that Jesus had been doing. He says, I've been doing these things, you go and do those things. So is Peter thinking now, well, let's try and do what Jesus is doing? Maybe. Or maybe he's thinking, I can't wait to get to Jesus. And it's the old commentators of the 17th century and 18th century commentators on Matthew that give us this idea. Matthew Henry says, true love will break through fire and water if duly called to it to come to Christ. Man called Hugh Martin says, Peter was impatient to be at the side of Jesus. He didn't want the meeting to be delayed. Maybe. We know on another occasion, John chapter 21, Peter and some other disciples were in the boat and Jesus was on the seashore cooking breakfast. Peter couldn't wait, so he dives into the water to get to Jesus. Very impetuous man, this Peter. And maybe that's the reason. Lord, if it's you, I want to get you as quickly as possible. Maybe, I like to think so. How does Jesus respond to Peter's very bold request? Lord, if it's you, tell me to come to you. Verse 29, come on then. Come, he says. So there's no rebuke, is there? There's no, Peter, you're so silly. You're going to get wet out here, man. Peter, stay in the boat. I'm coming to you. I'll be there soon. Stay where you are. Stay there in the boat. But there's no rebuke. There's no stay where you are. There's an invitation. Come on then. Walk on the water, Peter. Can you imagine what the other disciples in the boat were thinking and saying? Oh, there he goes again. That Peter. Sit down. Stay in the boat, Peter, you hothead. Or he'll learn. I wonder which one you would be. Would you be Peter asking the Lord to walk on the water, or would you be one of the disciples back in the boat? You know, I really don't know which one I would be there. You'd be one or the other, wouldn't you? Would you actually say, I'm not going out there? Or would you actually say, Lord, I want to come to you on the water? Well, Jesus gives a warm invitation with one of his favorite words, come. And you know what happens? Peter does it. He walks on the water to Jesus. And the detail in the text is really there, really clear. So we read here in verse 29, come, he said. So look at it. Then Peter got down out of the boat. So he put his legs over the side. Did he jump? Or did he just step? And what was the first step like? This is great faith, isn't it? What was the first step like? Remember, it's a storm. Remember, it's dark. Remember, there was lots of wind around. So the waves would have been really choppy. It wasn't a calm lake at all. And there's Jesus, and there's Peter putting his legs over the boat. And what was the first step? Did he expect to go right down? He walks on the water. It really is amazing. Brave to get out of the safety of the boat. Was he nervous? Was his heart beating fast? Did his clothes get wet? He walked on the water, for that's the next thing we read in verse 29. Then Peter actually got down out of the boat and he walked on the water and came to Jesus. He actually does it. This is great faith, to get out of the boat and to take a few steps. You know, this would have been one of those moments, if you were watching this on a film, this would have been one of the moments where you kind of tense up, isn't it? As you see this man putting his legs over the side of the boat, you're thinking, oh, don't do it! That would have been one of these moments. And maybe that's what the disciples in the boat were thinking, but Peter was there, out of the boat, walking to Jesus. He must have so trusted Jesus Christ, mustn't he? The storm, the water, the laws of gravity, which he didn't know about, but all that, he knew he would have sunk any other occasion. But he trusted Jesus with his life. Now, there's quite a while ago now, there was a series out called The West Wing. It's a great series, really enjoyed it. And there you've got the President of the United States of America called President Bartlett. And he's addressing his staff at a staff meeting. And they're looking for a new chief of staff. And President Bartlett says to one of the staff, "Have you got a best friend?" And the man replies, "Yes." And the president says, "Is he smarter than you?" And the man replies, "Yes." And the president says, "Would you trust him with your life?" And the man replies, "Yes." And President Bartlett says, "That's your chief of staff then." And Jesus is more than a chief of staff. He's the Son of God. And Peter trusts him with his life. His faith responds to Jesus' invitation and command. For that's what faith does. Faith responds to God's invitations. Faith is not believing our own flights of fancy and imaginations, but faith believes the invitation of Jesus. If Jesus hadn't said, "Come," Peter dare not get out of that boat, because he would have just been believing his own little mind. But because Jesus said, "Come," Peter can believe the promise and the invitation. And that's what faith does. Real faith always believes a promise or a command or an invitation. It's never our own imagination. So Jesus says, "Come," and Peter does it. I wonder, what bold, daring thing are you asking God that you may do? What bold, daring thing is God saying to you, "Come on then, try it"? You know, we live in a weird world. It is a weird world. A world, there's some just crazy things happen. People carry knives around to stab others. People blow themselves up in crowds of people. People throw acid in other people's faces. It's a crazy world. It's all kinds of unnatural things taking place between people. There's perversions of every kind. It is a weird, crazy world. And in that weird, crazy world, what are you asking God that you might do for him? What brave, adventurous, daring, bold thing, equivalent to walking on the water, what are you asking God that you might do? Our land is filled with violence and shame. We need people who will set examples of love and gentleness and kindness and peacemakers. Our land is filled with materialism and money worship. We need people to set examples of spiritual realities and pilgrimage to heaven. Our land is filled with prejudice and injustice. We need people to stand for truth and righteousness. Our land is filled with fractured families and relationships. We need people who will go and restore these fractures. Examples of godly family life. Our land is filled with broken people. Broken minds, broken hearts, broken bodies. We need restorers and healers put back out there again to help people put their lives back together. Our world is full of lost people on their way to a Christless eternity, and they need to be found and set on the way to heaven. And our world is filled with unreached people groups, and we need people who will give them the Bible. Expect great things from God. Attempt great things from God. We need to say to the Son of God who walks on the water, "Lord, tell me to come to you," and listen to him say, "What are you waiting for?" What brave, daring thing are you asking God that you might do for him? All my dreams, all my ambitions, all my hopes, I surrender into his hands. The invitation is given. But then there's finally the rebuke in verse 31. The rebuke, verse 31. Immediately Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. "You have little faith," he said. "Why did you doubt?" See, it all goes wrong for Peter in verse 30. "But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and, beginning to sink, cried out, 'Lord, save me.'" What went wrong for him is it so often did go wrong for him. But it only goes wrong for those, for people that actually try things. It goes wrong, he begins to sink. Don't forget, before he sank, he actually did walk on the water. How many steps he took, we don't know. But remember, it took great faith to walk even 2 or 3 steps on the water. Don't jump straight to the fact that Peter began to sink. First, he walked. But why does it go wrong for him? Well, it's because he's looking at what he's looking at. In verse 26, he sees Jesus. When the disciples saw him walking on the lake. So his eyes are on Jesus. But in verse 30, when he saw the wind, his eyes now are diverted. He's looking somewhere else. He's no longer looking at Jesus, but he's looking at the storm. And his faith shrinks when he sees the storm. He's got great faith to walk on the water because he's seeing Jesus. He sees the storm, his faith shrinks. And again in verse 30, he cries out. And that's exactly the same word that's used earlier on of all the disciples, to squawk like a raven. And that's what he's doing, is he's sinking. You think, well, no fish. Do fish make noise? Yeah, they probably do. But he's crying out, save me, save me. And Jesus saves him, verse 31. Immediately, Jesus reached out his hand and caught him. Immediately, it's the third time immediately is mentioned in this passage. It's like an instantaneous thing. Immediately, Jesus saved him. It's a picture of salvation, of course. But Jesus rescues him from sinking. And then he rebukes Peter. You have little faith. Why did you doubt? Remember, there's no rebuke for wanting to walk on the water. No rebuke for that at all. There's no rebuke for wanting to try great things for God. The rebuke comes for having little faith. Again, notice it's not no faith. Peter had been exercising huge faith walking on the water. And what's more, he had faith to cry out to Jesus to rescue him. So his faith is still there, but it's not huge anymore. It's little. And why is it little? It's little because Peter thinks there is something more powerful around than Jesus. That's why it's little faith. It's not no faith. It's little faith. He sees the storm and he thinks that is stronger and more determining in my life than the Son of God. And he begins to sink. Little faith. Why little faith? Because his faith could not see through the storm and the waves. Because he thinks the storm and the sea are more powerful than Jesus' promise and command. And when we think there are things more powerful than Jesus, then we are of little faith too. And we begin to sink. And our dreams sink with them. So the question, Jesus says, you have little faith. Why did you doubt? How do you answer that kind of question to Jesus? Why did you doubt? Jesus says. Now, the word for doubt here is literally to be divided into two. And so it means to have double-minded, to be thinking two things at the same time. That's what the word that is used. And Peter is thinking two things here. One, he's thinking, there's Jesus walking on the water. Two, he's thinking, there's the storm whipping up the sea. And he puts it together that the storm is more powerful than Jesus. So he doubts. And as he begins to doubt and sees the power and the strength of the wind and the waves rather than the power and strength of Jesus, then he's no longer surfing the waves or trekking the water, but he's sinking. And Jesus simply asks, why? Why doubt? And is the Lord saying this to you tonight? Why are you doubting? What are you thinking is stronger than Jesus? What in your life at this present time or situation you are going through and you are thinking that is the determining factor in my life. That is stronger than the Son of God. For then you begin to doubt and your faith shrinks and you sink spiritually. Now we all come across situation, people and things that we think are stronger and greater than Jesus. But we've got to remember they're not. Jesus is still the Son of God. For as Peter is sinking, Jesus is still walking. And as Peter is crying out, Jesus is rescuing. For he alone can rescue us. But what's your eyes fixed on? That's the determining thing. As long as Peter had his eyes on Jesus, he walked on the water. As soon as he saw the storm, as soon as he thought there was something bigger and greater than Jesus, he sunk. Do you know that through this lesson, Peter learnt a lot about himself? He saw his own courage, and he was aware of his own weakness. But also, he found out from this incident that his dream would never be fulfilled unless he had his eyes firmly fixed on Jesus. What is it that your eyes are firmly fixed on? What is it that's so big in your life at this present time that it's monopolizing everything, all your thought, all your waking hours, and it's worrying you? I want to tell you that the Son of God is stronger than that. Trust him. Trust him. So Jesus rescues Peter very graciously, and he brings him back into the boat, verse 32. When they climbed into the boat, the wind died down. Then those who were in the boat worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Back there in the boat, both men now in the boat, all of the disciples there in the boat. What are the disciples say to Peter after Peter had to be rescued? Well, it's not recorded, but we can imagine what some of the disciples might have been saying. They were probably shaking their heads in disgust, or they were probably even laughing behind their hands. You see what happened to him, big head? Maybe some did feel for him. Oh, poor chap, in public as well. Maybe some were even glad that he failed. So that's human nature. But we don't know what the disciples said to him. We do know what they said to Jesus, the climax of the story: "You are the Son of God." They worshipped him, and that's what this miracle basically is all about, who Jesus is, the Son of God. But I wonder what Jesus said to Peter. It says that as soon as they got into the boat, the wind died down. But what were Jesus' next words to Peter? Who did Jesus sit next to in that boat? Well, there's 12 men in the boat. Who did Jesus sit next to? Did he decide to sit next to the soaking wet Peter? And did he do the man hug thing? Put his arm around Peter and renew him? In the boat, when all was calm, in the boat after they worshipped him, what were the next words of Jesus to Peter? Was it something like this? "Peter, don't be discouraged. In fact, dream bigger dreams than this. You're going to do greater things than this. You think walking on the water is a big deal? Wait and see, Peter. Peter, do you know that one day I'm going to use you to do something massive? One day I'm going to use you to preach a sermon on the day of Pentecost in the Temple of Jerusalem in hostile circumstances. There's going to be thousands of people present, and 3,000 of them are going to be converted through a sermon that you preach, Peter." But Peter, remember the lesson of today, and remember these men in the boat with you. They might not have got out of the boat when you got out of the boat, and they might have been laughing at what seemed to them foolhardiness. But Peter, you're going to need these men, because when those 3,000 are converted on the day of Pentecost, who's going to baptize them and who's going to teach them? Can you do that on your own? No, Peter, something great is going to happen. Don't be discouraged. I've got great things in store for you. But remember the lesson of this day. Never forget today, the day you walked on the water and you succeeded as long as your eyes were fixed on me. But when you took your eyes off me, you sunk. Remember, Peter, don't take your eyes off me. Keep your faith in me, and you will do mighty things in my name. So, Peter, your dream of walking on the water was shattered because your faith shrunk. But redream, Peter. Dream big dreams. Dream something bigger, and look to me for the ability to do it. So let us give up our small ambitions. Let us rebuild our broken dreams. Let us do more than walk on the water. And let's do so as we have our eyes fixed on Jesus, who is the Son of God, and there's no one and nothing more powerful. Fix your eyes on him. Amen.